There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that is a roundup of the best bits of today's show from Monday, the 17th of February.
Big story this morning is, of course, the Global Women's Forum happening in Dubai today. It continues day two. Natalie Lindo is our reporter on the ground. She was there all day yesterday, and bright and early, she's been down at the Madinat at Jumeirah Conference Centre ahead of today's event. She says one of the big announcements has been impending changes to family leave provisions.
We heard from Mona Almari, who is the Vice President of the UAE Gender Balance Council, and she said that maternity and paternity leave here in the UAE is likely to be extended. So great news for any mums and dads. This announcement, of course, was made at the Global Women's Forum taking place today and yesterday. So some of these policies might look at flexible working hours, part-time, and we're not quite clear on how this will all work and what the timeline will be, but the bottom line is that they're talking about change.
Talking about change, we've been talking to various experts about this morning. We've had Amanda White from PSI Innovative HR Solutions in the studio asking her about maternity leave. And one of the questions we put to her was about criticisms of increased maternity leave. Now, normally you think of this as being an overwhelmingly good thing, but there are unintended consequences to most policies. For example, we had one message in this morning saying extra maternity leave and indeed paternity leave is all well and good, except for the fact that often it's your colleagues who are left to cover for you, to do the work, to work later, to work weekends, because cover is not provided, and that's often the reality in many organisations. So more maternity leave could put pressure on people who are left behind in the office, and that's something that we need to avoid. And Amanda said, yes, best practice is that you would provide cover for maternity leave. But with the best will in the world, if you've got someone who's really competent, knows their job, knows what they're doing, bringing someone into cover, it's going to take them a few weeks or months to get up to speed with the processes, with the procedures, with how you do business there. So it would, I guess, put pressure on colleagues in, not all, but many organisations.
Yeah, and I know this is obviously one of the things that every time I've discussed maternity leave on the agenda or other shows here on the station, it's something that always surprises me, the reaction we get from a lot of people here. And I think there is a very different mindset amongst many employees here in the region, which is, you know what, I don't want that much maternity or paternity. Easier, one would say, and I know I'm going to, you know, probably get it in the neck here for saying this, but easier for some fathers maybe to say, look, I don't need 6 months off or whatever like that. I'm more than happy to go back to work as quickly as I can. But, you know, I've heard it from a lot of mothers as well, keen to get back to work as quickly as they can. Now, whether that's right, whether that's wrong, there is enough research out there for you to make up your own mind. But it's down to an individual. And when you see a lot of people come out here to forward their careers, and a lot of people that come to work in this part of the region are very highly motivated, highly driven career individuals, can you so therefore for sanction in terms of maternity or paternity? And is it's this fine line as between what's too much and what's too little? But certainly it is an area that needs more definition when it comes to laws. It's great it's been talked about at the forum. It's great that we've been able to discuss it a little further here this morning. It puts pressure onto workforces. And again, also, I mean, in other parts of the world where you've got a more mature freelance network or internship network, you could bring support staff in. Whereas here, invariably, if you're looking for a position for 6 months, you are going to need to really bring somebody on a visa, which is a huge cost to a company.
That's another big issue, isn't it? Yeah. Maybe that's a conversation for another day. But certainly at the Global Women's Forum, it was one of the big talking points yesterday. Today, Natalie Lindo says, the one that everyone's looking forward to. Well, I'll let Natalie explain.
Now, one of the keynote speakers today taking part in the Women's Forum is the UK's second female Prime Minister, Theresa May. But what she wants to talk about is her experience of over two decades in the UK's Parliament. And she's going to be talking about her perspectives on female leadership in government. As I mentioned, she's only the second female Prime Minister and the important contribution of women to political life. It's going to be moderated by Her Excellency Lana Nusseibeh, who is the UAE UAE permanent representative to the United Nations. Now that is the hot ticket. Everybody that's here this morning is excited for what Theresa May is going to say.
Yesterday, two big stars really. One of them was Ivanka Trump.
We come together to ask nations in this region to continue to work with us to break new ground, to institute changes legally and culturally that will give every woman a chance to determine her own destiny and bring greater peace and prosperity to this region and to the world.
That was Ivanka Trump. Also speaking, Kristalina Georgieva, Managing Director of the IMF, talking about the role that women can play in boosting the global economy.
The time for women is turning in the Middle East. If tomorrow we wake up in a world with 100% gender equality, the wealth of this world would be, according to the most recent data, $172 trillion bigger. We would be a much richer world.
So did she borrow her backing track then or not?
Well, Tom is very taken by the orchestral music that we were hearing behind the voices of Ivanka and Kristalina Georgieva. That music was not playing on stage when they were speaking.
I think you and I, you know, we're missing a trick here, Rich. We've been seen on stages around the world. We need our own backing track.
Help is at hand. Producers Nonny, producers Milani heard your cry for help. So are you ready with the news headlines?
Okay, cool.
Business headlines.
Yeah.
Here you go. You requested the orchestral theme from Gladiator.
All right.
You got it. Say something.
Okay. Just get into character.
Construction giant Arabtek reported a loss for 2019 of $750 million. Arabtek blamed weakness in the real estate and construction industries.
Pray continue. I'm liking this.
It's yours now. It's the flip-flop, isn't
it? No. This is your rodeo, mate.
There was better news for school and hospital company Amanat, where profit climbed 40% to 60 million dirhams. Amanat owns Middlesex University in Dubai.
Enough of this nonsense. Thank you very much indeed for that. The business headlines, as you've never heard them before. This is the Ben's Brandy back. This is the Business Breakfast. She is back in about 10 days' time.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's get some more insight on one of the top trends that we're looking at, which is working from home. Media in China say that the biggest ever experiment in working from home is underway in Asia because of the coronavirus. But what are the pros and cons of working from home or flexible working? Oliver Baxter is the manager of the Insight Programme at Herman Miller, which is an office furniture specialist. He's with us in the studio. Morning, Oliver.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you for having me.
So, working from home, is it going to work?
Yeah, I think the data is clear. The evidence has been laid on the table, and it's apparent to everybody that working from home, flexible working, really does boost performance and productivity around about 13%, depending on the literature.
So a 13% productivity spike from working from home. Yeah. Let's dig into that data.
Yeah, so 8% of that 13% is actually just reducing the commute time. So if you don't have to drive for half an hour or an hour to the office there and back every day, then you're clawing back a little bit of your day that you could be investing in maybe a little bit more of a nutritional meal for yourself, spending time with the kids, but of course also work as well. So that all helps people to feel a little bit more happy and, you know, autonomous really in their own daily lives. And autonomy is one of the basic fundamental human needs that drives all of us in workplace today. We've identified 6 at Herman Miller, and autonomy is really what we're talking about when we're in the context of flexible working.
So basic human needs, autonomy is one of the 6.
Yeah.
Just round up the list for us.
Okay. So security, status, achievement, purpose, belonging, and then, of course, autonomy.
And then autonomy.
Yeah.
Fine. So half of the productivity gains is just we're not commuting, and that's dead time and wasted time, and we get it back. What are the other half of the productivity gains?
So productivity is a difficult one because it's subjective for everybody. So the 13% statistic that I just kind of threw out there, that was looking at people who work in call centers as an example. Now, not every white collar profession has a call center element to their job, but I like to reframe it in the context of engagement rather than productivity. So engagement is a little bit less subjective, and it has been quantified the world over. 15% on average is the global engagement rates the world over at the moment. It's actually 14% in the Middle East and Africa. So we're actually suffering the lowest level of engagement than we have had in the last 50 years. And guess what? Gallup, the company whose statistics I just quoted, they've highlighted that one day a week working from home for, giving people the option, they don't have to take it, but giving them the option to work from home for one day a week is that sweet spot where you'll get a spike of around 35% in engagement from your employees. If you give them 2 days a week, then it starts to deteriorate. And actually, if they're working from home every day of the week, it's worse than asking everyone to come in for 5 days a week.
Okay, so it's not a yes or no. It's a scale. And one day a week, the option to work one day a week is... the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the limitations. You quote research from Skype and Vodafone.
Yeah.
That highlight the limits of working from home.
Yeah, so the Skype and Vodafone research was really interesting because obviously we're talking about what's happening in China. Something similar, well, not in terms of disease control, but during the London Olympics, because of the transportation and all the pressures on there, a lot of employers were forced to implement a two-week flexible working strategy there as well. So actually with the Vodafone and Skype research, it demonstrated performance gains, but also one of the biggest issues was that 33% of those that did choose to work from home discovered that there was a fundamental flaw in the tools and technology that people were being provided with for their jobs. So things like cameras on their screens so that they couldn't connect with their peers visually. But one of the big things for me, and obviously I work in office furniture, is not like having a good chair to sit in. You know, if you're just working from your laptop for 8 to 10 hours a day, sat on a sofa, you're going to have some musculoskeletal issues, right? So, you know, you need a good chair at home. You need possibly even a standing, sit-stand electric desk, a monitor arm so that the monitor's at the right height so that you're not getting any issues with your neck, because that's quite a substantial weight. So, you know, it all needs to be looked at holistically, how we support people working in offices and also from home as well, so that people can do their best work. That's ultimately what we're trying to do, right?
30 seconds. What's happening here in the Middle East in terms of flexible working? We haven't done a huge amount of research in this region yet, but what have you learned? What have you seen?
I mean, this is just anecdotally from my perspective. I think we could potentially be doing more. I'm obviously from the UK. In 2002, the government implemented a strategy highlighting that people in white-collar professions were allowed to request flexible working from their employer. And that's been going, like I said, since 2002. So for 18 years, I don't know of such a policy that's embedded in the laws here. So I would love to see something mimicking that.
Oh, different question, 20 seconds. Are you seeing demand for different types of furniture here? For example, when people are fitting out offices, are they buying more flexible desks rather than individual workstations? Do you see that?
Yeah, there has been an increase in flexibility. I think that's probably more to do with the types of work that we're doing. Work complexity has increased, so therefore a desk and a chair on its own isn't enough to do the job today. So we need a plethora of different options to choose from, be it breakout spaces, be it private phone booths, working together, working on your own. I think we need to pay more attention to working on our own, not just the collaborative side of working, which is the cool bit. But actually, you know, there's, again, a lot of research from a company called Leisman that's highlighted that we've gone way too far into the collaborative side and we haven't focused enough on just supporting people's ability to do individual focused work.
Get the stuff done. Yeah. Great talking to you, Oliver Baxter. Thanks very much indeed. I know you had a baby 6 days ago, so the fact that you're in the studio, what that says about paternity leave, I'm not sure, but congratulations. Oliver Baxter from Herman Miller.
Thanks.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
Natasha Thomas with us in the studio, looking not just at the newspapers, also the stories making headlines on the ARN News Centre app. Morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Richard.
Let's talk about the coronavirus. We have one more case.
Yes, so the 9th case of coronavirus has been confirmed in the UAE. There's been an update on Twitter from the Ministry of Health and Prevention. They say a 37-year-old Chinese national has been diagnosed with COVID-19 during a routine checkup. Three people who were affected by the virus previously in the UAE, they have fully recovered, while six others are currently being monitored and receiving medical care.
Now, looking at a business story, this is business visas into Saudi Arabia.
Yes, so apparently all business visa applicants to Saudi Arabia will now have to obtain pre-approval from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Now, this pre-approval must be taken before a business visit visa application is submitted. Invitation letters for commercial and work visit visas that were used before have been scrapped. So the approval can be obtained online through the ministry's website, and it's expected that this new rule will extend the overall processing time for the visa, but it's not yet clear how many days that'll be.
Right, but this will be online.
Yes.
Okay.
So you get the approval beforehand and then you can apply for the visa. This is from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So we're not sure yet as to how much time that'll take to get that approval. But yes, they are trying to centralize everything in terms of business visas through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
I mean, I've spoken to a few people who do a lot of business in Saudi Arabia, and without naming names, the tourist visa, which is 12 months multiple entry for a few hundred dirhams, is proving very handy for people who are nipping in and out of Saudi Arabia doing bits of consultancy work. But
probably shouldn't be doing that at the tourist visa.
The Business Breakfast is not advocating that as a policy.
No.
You should get a proper business visa. Now, finally, Natasha, you've got a story, I know, about the Dubai Women's Tour, which starts today. But unfortunately for you, producer Nonny has insisted that we add a little bit of gravitas and drama to the situation by giving you some background music. The context is this. Global Women's Forum going on. You've been following it closely, yeah. So we've been hearing from some of the speakers there. And what the organisers have done, or the Dubai Media Office, when putting it on social media, rather than just putting the sound bites of Kristalina Georgieva or Ivanka Trump, they've put some dramatic kind of movie trailer type music underneath it. I'll give you a quick blast of what we're talking about.
The time for women is turning in the Middle East. If tomorrow we wake up in a world with one country...
Okay, so you get the thing.
About
15 minutes or 20 minutes ago, because Tom said, I want that kind of music. So Tom read the news, the business headlines with the theme from Gladiator as the background. And producer Nonny has insisted, Natasha Thomas, that you do the same. So, for the benefit of producer Nonny, and to be fair, Shan, who works in Maidan, who wrote in saying, Tom, that was awesome. Tell us, Natasha Thomas, what is happening with the Dubai Women's Tour?
Well, the inaugural Dubai Women's Tour gets underway in Dubai today. 17 teams from 14 different countries will compete over a four-day course in the first ever Dubai Women's Cycle Tour, including Italian sprinter Sofia Colonelli. Stage one is due to start from 9:30 this morning, so just about now, and will cover a 99-kilometer stretch starting from Dubai Festival City, ending at Nashama's Town Square, Dubai, on Al Qudra Road. And this will be the first ever UCI-sanctioned women's cycling event in the Middle East. The RTA have posted an interactive video map outlining the route.
Fabulous.
We need to talk to our producers.
Something needs to happen. We producer Shruti's been away, so we got Nonny producing. Brandy's away. We got Tom in the studio. When the cat's away, the mice will play. Natasha, thanks very much indeed. How do we follow that? Tom, you're picking the papers this morning.
I don't. I've got a pen that plays a song if you want. Got given it by Carl McLaughlin the other day. He came in to do an interview. And he gave me his pen. And apparently, it's one of those pens. Look, it's a Dubai Duty Free pen, okay?
Yeah.
And rather than, if you just press the top, it plays a song called Fly by Dubai, which was commissioned by Dubai Duty Free.
That's a book that he wrote.
Oh, is it? Really?
Yeah. Why didn't I get singing pens? Me and Brandy have missed a trick. Publish a book, get a singing pen.
The reason I've got it today is because All Things Dubai Duty Free, that kicks off today. So you've obviously got the Dubai Women's Tour, which is breaking new ground on the roads of the UAE. 20th anniversary. So big anniversary year for the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship and their relationship with the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association. That one gets underway in earnest around about 1 o'clock this afternoon. Still a few tickets available. Get yourself down there and sing along with Colm and the rest of the team from Dubai Duty Free with their singing pens.
And just a reminder that we'll be down there all throughout the tournament. So the off-script boys mostly will be down there, but Helen's heading down as well for the Women's Day, which is on Thursday.
I'll tell you one thing I do love about Colm McLaughlin is he doesn't miss a trick, because on handing over said pen with the fly by Dubai thing on it, He said, and just let everyone know that they are available, all good-to-buy duty-free outlets.
I'll never forget. It was when Colin was in, yeah, about 4 or 5 months ago. And he and Malcolm were great friends. And Colin gave a lovely speech at Malcolm's funeral. And we were talking about, they had some promotion on 20% off or whatever it was, hadn't they? Some summer promotion. And basically the only place Malcolm would ever go shopping was Macy's in the United States or Dubai Duty Free. That was it.
Limited then.
Yeah, but he would stock up. And we were talking about what was our favourite things to buy at Dubai Duty Free. And yeah, perfume or, you know, new watch or singing pain, whatever it may be. And Malcolm said to Colin, what is it that your favourite thing to buy Dubai Duty Free? And he said in the inevitable accent, 200 Benson & Hedges. It was just a candid honesty. But I guess when you've been in business successfully for 35 years, you can get away with saying things like that, can't you?
Exactly.
What a character. He was making tracks, wasn't he, Colin?
Yeah, he is. So he's making tracks. We've done a special edition of Making Tracks on the Agenda this coming Thursday. So tune in for that from 12 o'clock this coming Thursday for something of a Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship special as we speak to Colin McGaughan, the man that's been integral for the growth of Dubai Duty Free, and something of a legend, a kingpin of the duty free industry the world over. So that's coming away a little later on this week.
Natasha Thomas, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
We will have more movie soundtrack orchestral stuff for you tomorrow when you're reading your stories.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast. In the Zone with JAFSA.
An integrated trade, logistics and industrial hub.
Now, as you well know, Gulf Food is ongoing down the road at Dubai World Trade Centre all the way through till Thursday. Avoid the traffic if you can, but get in there if you can to find some of the most innovative products in the food and beverage and hospitality industries. Hunter Foods is one of those purveyors, a leading company manufacturing and packaging innovative, alternative and better for you snacks and foods here in the Middle East. Strong presence across the whole of Asia. In fact, they have seen a significant increase in revenues and export markets in recent times. A lot of that is down to their managing director. The managing director of Hunter Foods, Mr. Ananya Narayan, joins us live here in the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for having me at the Business Breakfast this morning.
Really great to have you on board. Now, you've been plying my dear friend and colleague, Mr. Richard Dean, with some of your new products. So before I get your thoughts on some of the new ranges, Rich, your product review?
The Shawarma. Shawarma chips. Why has no one thought of that before?
Which is going to be my first question, because it is a fundamental of the food industry here. The shawarma is everybody's favourite. Nobody's turned it into a snack before. So how did you do it and why did you do it?
Well, we've been trying to work on the principles of innovation, something Dubai prides itself on, and it is very much the direction of the country. We wanted to localize product that we're making. So we have been making hand-cooked potato chips for the last few years. But we wanted to now offer a localized flavor, something which spells out Dubai, the Middle East. And we wanted to start with the most favorite snack, which is a shawarma. So to create something which the people in Dubai can say, this is truly theirs. So it's only the beginning of a variety of flavors we're looking at, localizing, but shawarma was the starting point.
Pesto Parmesan is also one of the new additions that you can try down at Gulf Food. Get yourself down to the Hunter Food stand at Gulf Food to try that one out. This is part of your gourmet line for gourmet hand-cooked chips.
That's right.
But obviously, under the brand, you have different brands and more established brands as well that you work with. Do you need to come up with snacks and flavors for all different price ranges and tastes?
Yes, we do. We do look at different price points. We look at what would cater to the different segments. UAE has almost 200 nationalities. Yeah. It's probably the most diverse consumer group you'll have anywhere in the world. So it is difficult to find what will work for every group of customers here. But we try to use the same principles of better for you all the way down. People are getting more health conscious. So regardless, we use the same principles of better oiled, better ingredients, regardless of the price.
How do you, Ananya, in your role, help to sort of move the needle for your company within the industry as well? I mean, we talk about disruption in so many different industries at the moment. How do you change things around to make sure that you are ahead of the company in what is a very competitive industry and market?
Well, most companies tend to look at what are the largest categories and they try to dominate those categories. So traditionally, it's been potato-based, it's been puffed, which are more extruded products, or it's been tortilla. What we've tried to do is actually build other categories, other alternative snacking. So whether it's a pretzel chip, a vegetable chips, a fruit chips, a lentil-based, a rice-based, protein-based, quinoa-based, we try to bring in all these other types of alternative bases for snacks to give the choice to the consumer so they aren't left with what has traditionally been the common snack.
As a self-confessed snacker myself as well, I turn my blind eye every time I see that snacking is bad for you and different diet advice, etc. For a man who is dependent in many ways on the snacking industry here, are we good snackers here in the region and further afield? Is the snacking industry going to stick around?
Snacking is going to stick around for a long time. It's not going to go anytime soon. I think it's just the habits of the snackers is starting to change. People want something a little bit better, something which makes them feel less guilty to indulge.
You are up for Innovation Awards at the forthcoming Girl Food Innovation Awards for one of your products. A number of your products have been recognised already in the past. You've achieved so much in your role and with Hunter Foods. What's your major concern moving forward at the moment? What do you think is the biggest challenge for your company and the industry going forward in 2020?
For us as a company, it is trying to prioritise our growth plans, because there is so much to do. It's a very exciting year. We look at 2020 as the start of the new decade. I think building up our own infrastructure, we're looking at building a new factory this year. And within JAFSA, we've got one which is in Jabal Ali Free Zone, but we're looking at one in NIP. I think to build that right, to build the right team, that would be most important for us. As far as the industry, it is trying to always balance innovation, balance better for you, and getting the taste and the price. Balancing all of these different attributes in snacking, I think, is a constant battle we all live by.
Long may it continue. Go and see the team at Hunter Foods, Hall 5, Stand 507, Hall 6 at D629, to their managing director at Hunter Foods, Mr. Ananya Narayan. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.